mobbed or harassed. However, some people who have dementia do develop a suspiciousness that is inappropriate to the situation. Paranoia and suspiciousness are not difficult to understand. We're all suspicious. A certain amount of suspicion is probably necessary to our survival. The innate naivete of the child is carefully replaced by a healthy suspiciousness. We are taught to be suspicious of strangers who offer us candy, door-to-door salespeople, and people making offers too good to be true. Some of us were taught as children to be suspicious of people of other races or religions. Some people have always been suspicious, others always trusting. An illness that causes dementia may exaggerate these personality traits. Mrs. Henderson returns to her office to find her purse missing. Two other purses have disappeared this week. She suspects that the new file clerk has stolen it. As Mr. Starr comes out of a restaurant at night, three teenagers approach him and ask for change for the bus. His heart pounds. He suspects that they plan to mug him. Mrs. Bellotti called her friend three times to meet for lunch, and each time the friend refused, giving the excuse that she had extra work. Mrs. Bellotti worries that her friend is avoiding her. Situations like these occur frequently. One difference between the response of a well person and that of a person who has dementia is that the latter's ability to reason may become overwhelmed by the emotions the suspiciousness raises, or her inability to make sense out of her world. Ms. Henderson searched for her purse and eventually remembered that she had left it in the cafeteria, where she found it being held for her at the cash register. The person who has dementia lacks the ability to remember and to reason out complex problems. Therefore, she'll never find her purse and will continue to suspect the file clerk, as Ms. Henderson would have done had she not been able to remember where it was. Knowing that he is in a lighted, well-traveled area, Mr. Starr suppresses his panic and hands over some change to the three teenagers. They thank him and run to the bus stop. The person who has dementia lacks the ability to assess his situation realistically and to control his panic. He often overreacts. In this situation, he might have screamed, the teenagers would have run, the police would have been called, and so on. Mrs. Bellotti discussed her concerns with a mutual friend and learned that her friend had been sick, had gotten behind in her work, and was eating lunch at her desk. The person who has dementia lacks the ability to test out her suspicions against the opinions of others and then to evaluate them. The person who has dementia and becomes paranoid has not gone crazy. She lives in a world in which each moment is starting over with no memory of the moments that went before. For her, things disappear, explanations are forgotten, and conversations make no sense. In such a world, it's easy to see how healthy suspiciousness can get out of hand. For example, the person who has dementia forgets that you carefully explained that you have hired a housekeeper. Lacking the information she needs to assess accurately what's going on, she makes exactly the same assumption we would if we found a strange person in the house, that the person is a thief. Home care workers are often of a different ethnicity from the person who has dementia. It may help the person who has dementia become comfortable with a new care worker if you stay at home the first few times. The person who has dementia may treat the home health worker as a maid. Be sure that the home health worker knows that she's accountable to you, not anyone else. The first step in coping with excessive suspiciousness is to understand that this is not behavior the person can control. Second, it only makes things worse to confront her or to argue about the truthfulness of the complaint. Avoid saying, "I told you 20 times, I put your things in the attic. Nobody stole them." Perhaps you can make a list of where things are. Love seat given to Cousin Mary. Cedar chest in Anne's attic. When she says, "You stole my dentures," don't say, "Nobody stole your teeth, you lost them again." Instead say, "I'll help you find them." Locating the lost article will often solve the problem. Even if you don't find them, trying to do so can make the person feel acknowledged. Articles that are mislaid seem stolen to the person who can't remember where she put them, and who can't reason that nobody would want her dentures. One son securely fastened a key to the bulletin board so his mother could not remove and hide it. Every time she accused him of stealing her furniture, he replied gently, "All your things are locked in the attic. Here is your key to the attic where they all are." Sometimes you can distract a person from her focus on suspiciousness. Look for the lost articles. Try going for a ride or getting her involved in a task. Sometimes you can look for the real cause of her complaints and respond with empathy and reassurance to her feelings of loss and confusion. When many of a person's possessions must be disposed of so she can move into someone's home, residential care, or a nursing home, she may insist that they have been stolen. When you have assumed control over a person's finances, she may accuse you of stealing from her. Repeated explanations or lists sometimes help. Often they don't, because the person cannot make sense of the explanation or forgets it. Such accusations can be discouraging when you're doing the best you can for someone. The accusations are often, at least in part, an expression of the person's overwhelming feelings of loss, confusion, and distress. They're not really harmful to anyone, except that they are distressing for you. When you understand that they occur because of the brain damage, you will be less upset by them. Few things make us angrier than being falsely accused. Consequently, the person's accusations can alienate sitters, other family members, neighbors, and friends, causing you to lose needed sources of friendship and help. Make it clear to people that you don't suspect them of anything, and explain to them that the accusatory behavior results from the person's inability to assess reality accurately. Your trust in them must be obvious and strong enough to override the accusations made by the person who has dementia. Sometimes it's helpful to share with others written materials such as this book, which explain how the brain impairment affects behavior. Part of the problem is that the person who has dementia may look and sound reasonable. Because she may not look and sound as if this behavior were beyond her control, others may not realize what's happening. Some suspiciousness goes beyond this explanation. It can't be explained by the forgetfulness and loss of the ability to correctly assess reality. Such suspiciousness may be caused by the disease process itself. Low doses of medication are occasionally necessary when the untrue beliefs lead to threats to harm others or to severe distress in the person who has dementia that cannot be relieved by reassurance, activity, and empathy. Treatment not only makes life easier for you, but also relieves the person of the anxiety and fear that arise from her suspicions. Hiding things. In a world that is confusing and in which things inexplicably disappear, it's understandable that a person would put things of importance in a safe place. The difference between being well and being impaired is that the impaired person forgets where that safe place is more often than the well person. Hiding behaviors often accompany suspiciousness. Because these behaviors cause so many problems of their own, we've discussed them separately in Chapter 7. Delusions and hallucinations. Delusions are untrue ideas unshakably held by one person. They may be suspicious in nature. The mafia are after me, or you have stolen my money, or self-blaming. I am a bad person, or I am rotting inside and spreading a terrible disease. The nature of the delusion can help doctors diagnose the person's problem. Self-blaming ideas, for example, are often seen in people who are depressed. However, when delusions occur in a person who is known to have a brain impairment from stroke, Alzheimer's disease, or certain other conditions, the delusion is believed to arise out of the injury to brain tissue. It can be frustrating to have a person seem able to remember a false idea and unable to remember real information. Sometimes delusions appear to come from misinterpreting reality. Sometimes they're tied to the person's past experiences. A note of caution: Not every odd thing that a person says is a delusion. Hallucinations are sensory experiences that are real to the person having them, but that others do not experience. Hearing voices and seeing things are most common, although occasionally people feel, smell, or taste things that others do not. Mrs. Singer sometimes saw a dog asleep in her bed. She would call her daughter to come and get the dog out of my bed. Mr. Davis saw tiny little men on the floor. They distracted him, and often he sat watching them instead of taking part in activities at the senior center. Mrs. Ekman heard burglars outside her window trying to break in and discussing how they would hurt her. She called the police several times and earned herself the reputation of being a nut. Mr. Vaughn tasted poison in all his food. He refused to eat and lost so much weight that he had to be hospitalized. Hallucinations are a symptom, like a fever or sore throat, that can arise from many causes. Certain drugs can induce hallucinations, even in otherwise well people. Several disease processes can produce hallucinations. As with a fever or sore throat, the first step is to identify the cause of the hallucination. In an elderly person, hallucinations are not necessarily an indication of an illness that causes dementia. They may result from several other causes, many of which are treatable. Delirium is one example. If hallucinations or delusions appear in a person who has previously been functioning well, they are probably not associated with dementia. Do not let a doctor dismiss this symptom. The examples we have given are not all examples of people in whom the hallucination is a symptom of dementia. When hallucinations do develop as an inexplicable part of the dementia, your doctor can help. Often these symptoms respond to medications that make the person who has dementia more comfortable and life easier for you. When delusions or hallucinations occur, react calmly so that you don't further upset the person. Although this is not an emergency situation, you will want to check with the doctor as soon as convenient. Reassure the person that you are taking care of things and that you will see that things are all right. Avoid denying the person's experience or directly confronting her or arguing with her. This will only further upset her. Remember, the experience is real for her. You don't have to agree or disagree. Just listen or give a noncommittal answer. You could say, I don't hear the voices you hear, but it must be frightening for you. This is not the same as agreeing with the person. Sometimes you can distract the person so that she forgets her hallucination. Say, let's go in the kitchen and have a cup of warm milk. When she returns to her bedroom, she may no longer see a dog in her bed, and you will have avoided an upsetting confrontation. It's often comforting to touch the person physically, as long as she doesn't misinterpret your touch as an effort to restrain her. Say, I know you are so upset. Would it help if I held your hand or gave you a hug? One woman insisted that there was a snake in her bed. The staff took a bag to her bedroom and told her they had caught the snake. This may seem like lying to the person, but it made her comfortable and avoided an argument. Having nothing to do. As they progress, illnesses that cause dementia greatly limit the things the person can do. It becomes impossible to remember the past or to anticipate the future. The person can't plan ahead or organize a simple activity like taking a shower. Many people who have dementia can't follow the action on television. While you or the nursing home staff are getting chores done, the person may have nothing to do but sit with vacant time and empty thoughts. For the person who has dementia, restlessness, wandering, trying to go home, repetitive motions, asking the same question over and over, scratching, masturbating, and many other behaviors begin as an effort to fill this emptiness. But for the family caregiver, the hours are full. We don't think that family caregivers, with all the burdens they face, should be expected to take on the additional responsibility of planning recreation. We do think that activity is important and urge the use of a day center, other family, friends, or paid help if possible. Whenever you or someone else initiates an activity for a person who has dementia, you must walk a fine line between providing meaningful activity and overstressing the person. Move at the confused person's pace. Never let an activity become a test of her abilities. Arrange things so that she will succeed. Having fun should be more important than doing something correctly. Stop when the person becomes restless or irritable. Chapter 9. Special arrangements if you become ill. Anyone can become ill or have an accident. If you're tired and under stress from caring for a chronically ill person, your risk of illness or accident increases. The spouse of a person who has dementia, herself no longer young, is at risk of developing other illnesses. What happens to the confused, forgetful person if you, the caregiver, are injured or become ill? It's important to have a plan ready. Perhaps you will never need to put your plan into effect, but because dementia disables a person in such a way that he can't act in his best interests, you must have plans in place that protect both you and the person who has dementia. You need a physician who is familiar with your health, to whom you can turn if you become ill, one who is available quickly in a crisis. In addition, you need to plan in advance for several kinds of possible problems. The sudden, severe problems that would arise if you had a heart attack or a stroke, or if you fell and broke a bone. The less sudden problems that would arise if you had an illness and required hospitalization and/or surgery. And the problems that would arise if you got the flu or for some other reason were at home sick for a few days. Mrs. Brady suddenly began having chest pains and knew she should lie quietly. She told her husband, who had dementia, to go get their neighbor, but he kept pulling at her arm and shouting. When she finally was able to reach her phone and call 911, he refused to let the ambulance attendants into the house. A person who has dementia, even if he appears to function well, may, when he's upset, become unable to do things he usually can do. Should you suddenly become ill and unable to summon help yourself, the upset and confused person may not be able to summon help for you. He may misinterpret what's happening and impede efforts to get help. There are several possible ways you can plan to summon help. Post-emergency, call 911 by all telephones. Refer to Chapter 5 under Changes You Can Make at Home for more information about telephones. However, you can't depend on the person who has dementia, especially when he's under additional stress, to be able to respond to an emergency. Invest in a personal security alarm. This is a small device that you wear on your wrist or around your neck. When you press a button on it, you are connected with someone at the security service. You can talk to that person as he or she calls for help for you. There are several manufacturers of these devices. You pay a purchase fee plus a monthly service fee. The fees are not exorbitant and can save both your life and the life of the person who has dementia. Select one that will work in the shower. Carry a card in your wallet that states that the person you are with has dementia. Briefly state his immediate needs and give the phone number and name of a person who can assume care on an emergency basis. Carry with you a card that gives diagnoses and current medications for both yourself and the person who has dementia. Securely tape a copy of this to the refrigerator for emergency personnel as well. Keep it current. Even marking up the copy in ink is better than letting it slide until you have time to redo it. Keep your cell phone with you at all times. Keep your favorites list up to date so that you can get in touch with help immediately. Many areas have programs for senior citizens in which someone will call once a day to see if you're all right. This may mean a long delay in getting help, but it's better than nothing. Be sure that the person who would respond in a crisis has a key to your house. The upset, confused person may refuse to let anyone in. In case you must go into the hospital, or if you are at home sick, you will want to plan carefully in advance for the care of the person who has dementia. Changes will be upsetting for him, so you should minimize change as much as possible. The substitute caregiver should be someone he knows and someone who knows your routines for managing him. Refer to Chapter 10 for possible sources of temporary help. Be sure that the names and phone numbers of your doctor, the patient's doctor, the pharmacist, your lawyer, and close family members are written down where the person helping out in an emergency can find them. Some families have made up a COPE notebook in which they've jotted down the things another person would need to know. For example, Dr. Brown, 773-555-8787. John gets a pink pill 1 hour before lunch. He will take it best with orange juice. The stove won't work unless you turn on the switch that is hidden behind the toaster. John starts to wander around supper time. You need to watch him then. Some families give a care sheet of instructions to all family members or friends who may be called on to help. This care sheet covers all the important aspects of the person's care, from meals to medications and activities, and it includes essential phone numbers of responsible people and professional caregivers. In the event of your death, when someone close to you has an illness that causes dementia, you have a special responsibility to provide for him if you should die. While there is a good chance your plans will never have to be put into action, they must, for the sake of the person who has dementia, be made. When a family member is unable to take care of himself, it's important that you have a will that provides for his care. Find a lawyer whom you trust and have him draw up a will and any other necessary legal papers. Every state has a law that determines how property will be divided among your heirs if you do not make a will or if your will is not valid. However, this may not be the way you want your estate to be distributed. In addition to the usual matters of disposing of property to one's heirs, the following questions must be addressed and appropriate arrangements made. Also refer to Chapter 15. What arrangements have been made for your funeral, and who will carry these out? You could select a funeral director in advance and specify, in writing, what kind of funeral you'll have and how much it will cost. In some cases, you can pay in advance for the arrangements and obtain a certificate specifying what services will be provided for the advance payment. Be sure to provide a copy to trusted family members or friends so there are no questions when the time comes. Far from being macabre, this is a considerate and responsible act that ensures that things will be done as you wish and that saves your distraught family from having to make these arrangements in the midst of their grief. Funerals can be expensive, and advance plans make it possible for you to see that your money is spent as you wish. What immediate arrangements have been made for care of the person who has dementia, and who will be responsible for seeing that they're carried out? Someone must be available immediately who will be kind and caring. Do the people who will be caring for the person who has dementia know his diagnosis and his doctor? And do they know as much as possible of what you know about how to make him comfortable? What financial provisions have been made for the person who has dementia and who will administer them? If he can't manage his own affairs, someone must be available with the authority to care for him. You'll want to select a person whom you trust to do this rather than leave such an important decision to a court or judge. When such decisions are made by a court, they involve long delays and considerable expense. Sometimes a husband or wife cares for years for a spouse with an illness that causes dementia and does not want to burden sons or daughters with the knowledge of this illness. Said a daughter, "I had no idea anything was wrong with Mom because Dad covered for her so well. Then he had a heart attack, and we found her like this. Now I have the shock of his death and her illness all at one time. It would have been so much easier if he had told us about it long ago. And we didn't know anything about dementia. We had to find out all the things he had already learned, and it's such a difficult time for us." All members of the family need to know what is wrong with the person and what plans have been made. An experience like this is one example of the disservice of protecting other members of the family. You should have a succinct summary of your assets available for the person who will take over. This should include information on the location of wills, deeds, stocks, cemetery lot deeds, and information about the care of the person who has dementia. Tell someone you trust where it is. Chapter 10. Getting Outside Help. Throughout this book, we have emphasized the importance of finding time for yourself away from the responsibilities of caring for the person who has dementia. You may also need other kinds of help. Someone to see that a person who is alone during the day gets her meals. Someone to help give her a bath. Someone to watch her while you shop, rest, or take a break. Someone to help with the housework, or someone with whom you can talk things over. You may want someone to stay with the person part of the day, or you may need a place where she can stay for several days while you take a vacation or get medical care. At some point, you may need to find a place where she can spend time away from you and where she can make friends of her own. Such outside help is called respite because it gives you a break from caregiving. This chapter describes the kinds of services that may be available. The second part of the chapter discusses some of the problems you may encounter. Help from friends and neighbors. Usually, caregivers who feel that they have the support of others manage the burdens of care more successfully. It's important that you not feel alone with your burden. Most people first turn to family members, friends, or neighbors for support and help. Often, people will offer to help, or you may have to ask them for help. Family members sometimes disagree or don't help out, or you may hesitate to ask others for the help you need. In Chapter 11, we discuss some ways to handle family disagreement and to ask for help. Others are often willing to help. Sometimes a neighbor will look in on the person who has dementia. The pharmacist will keep track of prescriptions for you. The minister, priest, or rabbi will listen when you're discouraged. A friend will sit with the person in an emergency, and so forth. As you plan, you should consider these resources because they're important to you. How much help should you accept or ask for from friends and neighbors? Most people like to help, yet making too many demands on them may eventually cause them to pull away. When you turn to friends and neighbors for help, there are several things you can do to help them feel comfortable helping you. Some people are uncomfortable around those who are visibly upset. You may not want to express all of your distress to such people. Close friends may be more willing to share some of the emotional burden with you than people who don't know you well. Although most people have heard of Alzheimer's disease, many need more information to understand why the person acts as she does. Explain that the behaviors are the result of the damage to the brain, that they are not deliberate or dangerous. People may be reluctant to sit with or visit with the person because they feel uncomfortable and don't know what to do. You can help by suggesting specific things that the visitor might do with the person. For example, mention that going for a walk might be more fun than a conversation, or that reminiscing about old times will be fun for both of them. Tell the visitor what you do when the person who has dementia becomes irritable or restless. Some chapters of the Alzheimer's Association have programs to train family members or friends to be special visitors. Such visitors bring pleasure to the person who has dementia, as well as giving you time away from caregiving. When you ask people to help you, give them enough advance notice, if possible, so they can plan the time to help you. Remember to thank them and avoid criticizing what they have done. Look for things others can do that they will not consider inconvenient. For example, neighbors may not mind looking in because they live close by, while more distant friends may resent being asked to make a long drive. Finding information and services. At some point, most families look for outside help in obtaining information, making decisions, and planning for the long-term care of their afflicted family member. Most families also need some time for themselves away from caregiving. Many families find the help they need and manage effectively without extensive professional assistance. However, the burdens of caring for a person who has dementia are enormous, and many people have difficulty finding the services that might make caregiving easier. Kinds of services. People who have dementia and their families may need several kinds of services. Most are available for a fee. A few are available without charge. An increasing number of people who develop dementia are under age 60. The Alzheimer's Association can direct them and their family to community resources with expertise in the unique problems they're likely to face. There are additional resources for people 60 years old or older. Most local offices on aging and senior centers have a list of free or reduced-fee programs for people over 60 or over 65. AARP is also a good source of information about such resources. Some programs offer services such as dental care, discounted dentures, relatively low-cost eyeglasses, legal counseling, social work help, referral services, and free tax assistance to people over 60, their spouses, and people who are disabled. Some programs provide prescription medications or medical appliances at reduced cost. Some provide transportation. There are a few programs that repair older people's homes at reduced rates. You may be able to use such a program to install wheelchair ramps, locks, grab bars, and other safety devices. In some areas, programs such as Meals on Wheels will bring a daily hot meal to people who cannot get out. These meals are often delivered by friendly, dedicated volunteers who will also check to see how a person living alone is doing, but they provide limited help for a person who's becoming confused and are not a substitute for supervision. Expanded nutrition programs offer a hot lunch and a recreation program in a sheltered group setting for several hours each weekday. They usually don't provide medical care, give medicines, or accept wandering, disruptive, or incontinent people. They're often staffed by lay or paraprofessional people. People who have a mild or moderate dementia may enjoy the group setting. Nutrition programs funded through the Older Americans Act serve people over 60 and their spouses. You can find them by calling your local senior center or Commission on Aging. Some hot lunch programs are intended for well older people, and a person who has dementia wouldn't fit in. Other programs under the same or similar funding offer services to frail elderly people. You may be able to attend with your spouse if you wish. Such programs do not provide adequate supervision for a person living alone. Mr. Williams was confused and often became restless. His wife arranged for a senior volunteer to visit and play checkers with him. He loved checkers, and the volunteer understood and didn't mind that Mr. Williams often forgot the rules. The volunteer became his checkers pal and made it possible for Mr. Williams to have a friendship and an enjoyable activity. At the same time, Mrs. Williams got a break. Two online sources of information are the Elder Care Locator, www.eldercare.gov, and the National Adult Day Services Association, www.nadsa.org. There are many other programs. We have referred to some of them in other parts of this book. You should find out what's available in your area, even if you don't feel you need the service now. Refer to Chapter 15 for a discussion of financial resources. Having someone come into your home. Many families arrange for someone to come into their home to help with the person's care. A homemaker will help you with tasks such as housework, cooking, laundry, or shopping. A home health aide or a personal care aide will help the person who has dementia dress, bathe, eat, and use the bathroom. Families of people who have dementia most commonly turn to a paid companion or sitter. Sitters provide supervision and may help the person with meals. Some will give her a bath. Some have had special training to provide the person who has dementia with socialization and meaningful activities. Visiting nurse and home health agencies send professionals, nurses, social workers, and other therapists into homes to provide evaluation and care. A nurse, for example, may monitor the person's status, change a catheter, and give injections. A speech therapist can help a person who has had a stroke regain language skills. while a physical therapist may exercise the person. Because a nurse is expensive, and because Medicare will pay for this care only under strict guidelines, most families employ a nurse only when the person who has dementia has an acute illness that's difficult to manage at home. Hospice team members teach you how to care for a dying person at home. Home care is the first choice for many families. It's helpful when the person is ill or can't get out of the house. However, although home care provides supervision and personal care, it is less often able to offer socialization and meaningful activities. Adult daycare. Adult daycare offers several hours a day of structured recreation in a group setting. Lunch and activities such as exercise, crafts, discussion, and music are offered. Programs may be open from 1 to 5 days a week. A few offer weekend or evening care. Some daycare programs accept both people with a range of physical impairments and people who have dementia, but others specialize in the care of people who have dementia. Those that do may take people with severe impairments and may offer more activities designed for people who have dementia. However, many programs that mix people who have dementia and those with other conditions provide good care to both groups. The skill of the staff and the philosophy of the program are most important in determining its quality. Adult daycare is one of the most important resources for families. It provides urgently needed respite for the caregiver and often benefits the person who has dementia. For most of us, the pressures of daily life can be relieved by getting away sometimes to be with friends or to be alone. The person who has dementia does not have this opportunity. She must be with her caregiver day after day, but her impairment doesn't take away her need to have her own friends and time apart. The burden of this enforced togetherness may be as difficult for the person who has dementia as it is for the caregiver. People who have dementia experience failures and reminders of their inadequacies at every turn. But even when they can't feed or dress themselves, they often retain their ability to enjoy music, laughter, friends, and the pleasure of doing some simple activity. People who have dementia may make friends with other people at the center, even when they're so impaired that they may not be able to tell you about their friend. Daycare staffs observe that participants regain a sense of humor, appear more relaxed, and enjoy the activities. Good daycare programs find ways for people to succeed at little things and thereby feel better about themselves. Daycare programs fill empty time with activities the person can do well. Some programs don't offer much stimulation or socialization for the impaired person who has dementia, but they remain a valuable source of time away for you. Some programs offer both daycare and in-home care. They're flexible so that you can shift from one to the other as your needs change. Daycare programs sometimes won't take clients with severe behavior problems. They may not take those who are incontinent or those who can't walk independently, although some dementia-specific programs accept these very impaired individuals. Some daycare centers specialize in people who have a mental illness or who are developmentally disabled. Some accept only frail people who are not cognitively impaired. Some offer few activities. Check out the program to be sure it will meet the needs of the person you're caring for. A major barrier to daycare is transportation. Transporting people to and from daycare is time-consuming and expensive. Some programs pick people up. Some contract with local transportation or taxi services, and some require that you transport the person. Be sure that the person will be given enough supervision while en route to the program. Many families turn to daycare or home care as a last resort, when residential care or nursing home care is what the person needs. We think this is a mistake. The person's ability to adjust to and benefit from the respite care program is usually greater if you seek respite care early, when the person still has some mental capacity to adjust to and enjoy the new program. Your continued ability to care also depends on getting relief for yourself early. While you can't expect home care or daycare to be the same as what you yourself provide, You'll want to be sure that the care is adequate. If you have real concerns about the quality of care, talk to the local Alzheimer's Association or the local Office on Aging about the program. You can drop in unexpectedly at a daycare center. However, even if the person spends time sitting and looking at TV, the respite is still important for you. Short-stay residential care. In short-stay respite settings, the person who has dementia lives in a nursing home, an assisted living facility, or boarding home for a short period, a weekend, a week, or a few weeks, while the caregiver takes a vacation, receives needed medical care, or just rests. The concept of short-stay respite care may be unfamiliar to you, but you should consider trying it. Caregivers who use it are enthusiastic about it. There's little funding available for short-stay care. Some caregivers are reluctant to use short-stay respite. They fear that once they give up the burden of care, even temporarily, they'll be unable to shoulder it again. There must be a clear understanding between the provider and the family about the duration of the stay. As with all support programs, respite care is more effective when families use it before they reach the breaking point. You may negotiate for this service yourself with a facility or an individual who will take in one or two clients. Because there's often little governmental oversight of such care, you must make sure that the provider understands how to care for your family member and is a kind and gentle person. New surroundings may stress people who have dementia, so short-stay respite programs need enough skilled staff to give individual attention to their guests. A range of combinations of respite programs has been developed for people who have dementia and their families. Some respite programs offer resources for the caregiver as well as the person who has dementia. Some programs, designed for people who have dementia, create positive experiences for the person with dementia that go far beyond being merely a sitter service. The Alzheimer's Association may be able to help you find resources. Planning in advance for home care, daycare, and respite care. Once you have found a good program, there are a few things you must do to make visits go smoothly. Be sure that the provider understands the nature of the dementia and knows how to handle problem behaviors. Write out special information for the provider. How much help will the person need in the bathroom or with meals? What is she like for lunch? What cues does she give that she's becoming irritable, and how do you respond? What special needs does she have? Be sure the care provider knows how to reach you, another family member, and the doctor. Be sure that the provider is informed by you that only you have the authority to hire and fire. If the person has complicating health problems, such as a heart or a respiratory condition, a tendency to choke or fall, or seizures, you must carefully consider the skills of the person with whom you leave her. When the person who has dementia rejects the care. Families often think their family member who has dementia would never go to daycare or accept a home visitor. People who have dementia often surprise everyone by enjoying daycare or a home visitor. Avoid asking the person if she would like to go to daycare. She's likely to answer no because she doesn't understand what you're suggesting. Some people continue to say they don't want to go even when they're clearly enjoying themselves. This usually means that they don't understand or don't remember their enjoyment. Continue to take the person to daycare cheerfully. When a family is able to arrange for someone to stay at home with the person who has dementia may fire the sitter or housekeeper, may get angry or suspicious, may insult her, may refuse to let her in, or may accuse her of stealing. People who have dementia may refuse to go to daycare or put up such a fuss getting ready that the caregiver gives up. To the person who has dementia, the new person in the house may seem like an intruder. The person entering daycare may feel lost or abandoned. What she says may reflect these feelings more than fact. Be prepared for a period of adjustment. People who have dementia adjust to change slowly. It may take a month for such a person to accept a new program. When you're already exhausted, arguments over respite care may seem overwhelming. You may feel guilty about forcing your relative to do this so that you can get a break. Make a commitment to yourself to give the program a good trial. Often the person who has dementia will accept the new plan if you can weather the initial storm. What you say will make a difference. Refer to the respite plan as an adult activity the person will like. Present the home care provider as a friend who has come to visit. Find things the person who has dementia likes to do that the two can do together. Take a walk, groom the dog, play a game of checkers, even if not by the rules, or make brownies. Call daycare anything the person will accept, for example, the club. Often, people who have a mild impairment prefer to volunteer at the center. Most daycare programs will support this. Helping people who are more impaired allows the person to feel successful while reducing the pressure on her to perform. Write the person who has dementia a note. Explain why she's there or why the home care provider is there, when you will return, and that she is to stay there and wait for you. Sign the note and give it to her or to the provider. If this doesn't work, have your doctor write and sign such a note. The provider can read it with her each time she becomes restless. Some families make a short video on a smartphone, tablet, or computer about the care of the person. This is particularly helpful when the provider will be assisting in personal care such as dressing or eating. You could show the order in which you do things, like which arm goes into its sleeve first. You might leave written instructions as well. Daycare and home care providers have found that people adjust better when, one, the first visits by the in-home provider or to daycare are short enough that the person who has dementia doesn't get tired in the strange situation. Two, the primary caregiver stays with the person who has dementia the first few times an in-home visitor is used. This may help the person begin to feel that she knows this visitor. Although many daycare programs ask caregivers to stay with the person the first time or two, a few prefer that they not remain. For most people who have dementia, the presence of the caregiver is reassuring. A few do better on their own, away from the caregiver's tension and uncertainty. 3. Someone from the daycare program visits the person at home before her first visit to daycare. Remember, for the person who has dementia, each visit is like starting over. However, most people gradually begin to accept the new routine. More frequent visits to daycare or from the home care provider may help the person experience a sense of continuity. Some caregivers find that the hassle of getting the person ready is so great that daycare isn't worth it. Perhaps you can arrange for a friend or neighbor to come in to help with this chore. Allow plenty of time. Feeling rushed will upset the person who has dementia even more. Occasionally, a person in daycare will come home and say to her husband, "My husband is at the center." Of course, this is distressing for the caregiving husband. The wife in such a situation usually doesn't mean husband. Perhaps she's trying to say friend, but can't find the word. Perhaps husband is the closest word she can find to mean companion. It doesn't necessarily imply a romance. Sometimes the person will say, "She hit me," or "They wouldn't give me anything to eat," or "The fat one took my purse." Ask the program staff about the incident, but keep in mind that people who have dementia can misperceive, misremember, and express themselves inaccurately. Perhaps she can't remember having lunch. You may ask the person, "What did you do today?" And she may reply, "Nothing." "Well, did you have a good time?" "No." Answers like this may indicate that she can't remember what went on. Don't embarrass her by continuing to ask. Ask a staff member what she enjoyed today. If the person who has dementia says she doesn't want to go to daycare or have the home care provider, you don't have to take this literally. She may mean that she doesn't understand what you are suggesting. She may not remember earlier visits at all. Avoid getting into arguments. Reassure her that this is something she can handle, that you'll come back for her, and that the people there are nice and will help her. A few people who have dementia can't adjust to home care or daycare. Try several different providers. Some people have a way with those who have dementia. Ask yourself whether your attitude is affecting her adjustment. If you can't use a respite program now, try again in a few weeks or months. Often, changes in the person's condition will make it easier for her to accept the program later. Your own feelings about getting respite for yourself. It's not unusual for a family to be discouraged by their first visit to a daycare center. Mr. Wilson said, "I went to see the daycare center. The hospital told me this was an excellent center, but I can't put Alice in there. Those people are old and sick. One of them was dragging a shopping bag around and mumbling. One was drooling. Some of them were sleeping in these chairs with a tray across them." The sight of other disabled or elderly people can be distressing. Our perception of the person we live with is colored by our memory of how she used to be. You may feel that such a program doesn't offer the individual care that you can give at home, or you may feel that no one else can manage the person. Some families are reluctant to bring a stranger into their home. You may not like strangers in your home, or you may worry about whether they're honest. You may not want anyone to see your house in a mess. And many people feel, "My family and I are private people. We take care of our own. We just aren't the kind of people who use public help." Like you, American families provide almost all of the care of frail elderly people. 75 to 85% of all care comes from family members. Illnesses that cause dementia create particularly devastating burdens for family members. Because they are diseases of the mind, you're faced with the grief of losing companionship and communication, with the tasks of dressing, feeding, and toileting the person, and with difficult behavior. These diseases last many years, and caregivers usually cannot leave the person who has dementia alone for even a few minutes. Many caregivers are doing little more than surviving, just barely hanging on. If you become ill, as many caregivers do, others will have to assume responsibility for the person you care for. Good care means caring for yourself, too. If you're tired and depressed, you may snap at her. She will usually sense your distress and may respond, she can't help it, by whining or wandering or arguing even more. Many caregivers wonder whether medications would control these behaviors. As we noted earlier, they can have serious side effects and are not particularly effective. They may even make the person more confused. Ask yourself, am I rushing her, snapping at her, slapping her? The best prescriptions we know are to talk with other families and to take some time to be away from the person who has dementia. Arranging a little time for yourself and coming back rested and in better humor can enable you to continue caring. If the people in daycare seem more impaired than your family member, it's likely she will feel comfortable where her difficulties won't be noticed and where she can be the helper. If you have checked references, it's likely that the person coming into your home is honest. If you have hired them through an agency, they should be bonded. Home care workers say they rarely notice how messy the house is. Talk with other families. Often they too were reluctant, but will tell you that the time apart helps the person who has dementia as well as themselves. Caregivers have told us that knowing that a professional provider is also having difficulty with the person makes them feel better about their own efforts to manage. Even if the respite situation is not perfect, if the home sitter watches soap operas or the participants in daycare seem to just sit a lot of the time, you may want to continue with it. Your continued strength and your ability to keep providing care may depend on your getting regular breaks from caregiving. Some in-home providers urge that you leave the house while they provide care. This is because they think caregivers need the time away. It's tempting to stay and talk with the respite worker or help with the person who has dementia, but you may manage better in the long run if you get away, even if all you do is take a walk, play bridge, or visit with a neighbor. If you stay at home, go into another room, away from the person who has dementia. Locating resources. Some towns and cities have a central information source that can tell you what services are offered and how to get them. Even when this is available, their information may not be complete or current. Therefore, you'll need to be persistent and may have to contact several individuals or agencies. The process of locating resources can be long and tedious. If you're providing most of the supervision and care of a person who has dementia, you may feel too overwhelmed to do this. It may be difficult to make telephone calls in her presence. If you're overwhelmed, ask another family member or a close friend to take on the job of locating outside help. If you're not the person with daily responsibility for care, offer to help the caregiver locate outside services. Before you begin, think about what kinds of help would be right for you and the person who has dementia. Do you need help with financial planning? Do you need more information about the disease or about diagnosis? Should you try daycare or a sitter at home? If you use daycare, will you need transportation for the person? Do you need help for specific tasks, such as giving baths? Do you want to get out one night a week, or do you need to get out during the day when you can drive? Do you need someone to talk to? What kind of help will the person need? If she becomes agitated, wanders, or is incontinent, be sure that the provider can manage this. Does she need help walking, or does she need bed care? Write down your questions before you begin making calls. Keep notes of your conversations. Write down the names of the people you talk to. If you call back later for additional information, this record will be helpful. If the person you speak to doesn't have the answers to your questions, ask to speak to someone who does. If a person brushes you off, ask to speak to someone else. Begin by contacting the local chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Its phone number will be listed on its website. Most chapters have paid professional staff and will be able to tell you about good programs in your area that accept people who have dementia. A concerned person from the association, often someone who also has a family member who has dementia, will listen to your needs and make suggestions. The chapters usually don't make formal evaluations of the quality of programs, but they can often tell you what other families have thought of a service. Also, call the local Office on Aging. The name of this state and federally funded organization varies from place to place, but you can usually find it listed on the internet under Senior Citizens or Older Adults, or under local government listings. Some of these agencies have professionals who will help you locate resources. Some have special programs for people who have dementia, including in-home sitters or daycare. Some will provide transportation to daycare. Some fund limited amounts of daycare or in-home care. Most offices on aging are knowledgeable about dementia and have an effective referral system. They may know little about the quality of the services they refer people to. Adult daycare staff often know about other services available in the area. It's worth calling them, even if you don't want adult daycare. If there's a regional Alzheimer's disease center or resource center near you, its staff members probably know what resources are available for people who have dementia. Other potential information resources include community health centers, geriatric assessment programs, senior centers, and nursing home ombudsperson programs. They often have information and referral services. Some will be helpful, others will not. The staff of an agency may not know about local services. In a few places, each of these agencies provides outstanding daycare or in-home care to people who have dementia, but in other areas, they don't serve people who have dementia or their families. You may not find what you need. Unfortunately, the resources needed by the families of people who have dementia are often not available. Don't blame yourself if you can't find the resources you need. Some agencies have a waiting list or will only take people with certain diseases or disabilities, while other agencies may be too expensive. Perhaps you will want to accept what resources are available, even if they're not ideal, because you may find that obtaining even some help is better than trying to cope alone. Occasionally, families are able to exchange services. Such plans can be simple or elaborate. Basically, two or three families agree to take turns sitting. You may sit with two people in your home for one afternoon a week. Then the next week, someone else will sit while you have an afternoon out. This works best when the people who have dementia are not agitated and do not wander. They will enjoy the contact with others. The rules of exchange services should be clearly spelled out. An organization of families might want to train one or two people in the management of people who have dementia. Such a person would have a full-time job dividing her time among several families. The person who helps you may be a family member, a friend, a neighbor, or a member of your place of worship. Alzheimer's Association chapters often provide training for such people so that they will feel more secure in helping care for the person who has dementia while you have some time away. Some families locate a respite care worker by advertising or through word of mouth. Older people who need work but lack formal skills are a good source of help. Also, consider college students. Some students are gentle and kind and have had experience with their own grandparents. Paying for care. Check to see if the person has long-term care insurance. Some policies cover only nursing home care, while others cover home care, daycare, hospice, and residential care. Fees for daycare and in-home care vary, often depending on the sources of governmental or private funding the program has access to. There is no national resource for assisting middle-class families with the costs of daycare or in-home care. Medicare does not pay for long-term care. If a person is hospitalized and needs rehabilitation services, these might be covered as long as the person is improving as a result of the rehabilitation therapy. Medicare rarely pays for home care unless the person is unable to leave the home. Medicaid may pay for daycare that it deems medical daycare, but it will not pay for daycare that provides only social enrichment. Find an experienced home health agency and discuss whether it will be able to help you get Medicaid coverage for its services. Medicare regulations change with changes in federal policy and can be confusing to interpret. Ask the social worker or service agency staff to help you find out whether their services to you are reimbursable. It may be worthwhile to request that a decision be reviewed by Medicare. In general, except for a few demonstration projects, Medicare does not pay for respite for caregivers of people who have dementia. Home nursing and home health aides can also be hired from nursing agencies. If you use an agency, be sure the person is bonded and that you know whether it will replace an aide if she doesn't show up. You should ask how much training or experience the aide has had in caring for people who have dementia. Emphasize that you will need someone the person who has dementia can communicate with. Home health aides and companions that you locate and contract with are usually less expensive than agency staff members, but you can spend considerable time locating them, and some are unpredictable. Some people advertise for help in local newspapers, and some home health aides advertise their availability in newspapers or bulletin boards in local stores. Families suggest that you seek advice from a home aide who is working with someone you know. She may have friends who are looking for work. If you hire someone, recognize that it is unreasonable to ask a person to both clean the house and watch a person who has dementia. Realistically, a domestic helper probably cannot look after the person and clean the house. It is challenging for you to do both, and often impossible for someone unfamiliar with your house and with the person who has dementia. You may have to settle for a sitter and a house that is not very well kept. Discuss fees, hours, and exact responsibilities before you hire. Fees may be surprisingly high, particularly in metropolitan areas. In some states, Medicaid pays for home care and daycare for a few low-income people, but eligibility is limited, and even this is not available in many areas. Some states have limited funds to pay for in-home or daycare through the Office on Aging. Federal and state governments and some foundations are funding respite care demonstration programs, but these serve only a few people for limited periods of time. Some programs provide trained volunteers as in-home or daycare workers. These programs work well, but there are costs for supervisory and training personnel, transportation, and insurance. A fee may be charged to cover these costs. In some states, low-income people with a disability are eligible for a paid personal assistant to help with household chores and personal care. People eligible for Medicaid or Supplemental Security Income, SSI, may automatically qualify for this help, and in some states, families with somewhat higher incomes can obtain these services if they pay a share of the cost. An increasing number of states will pay a family member or a relative to provide this care. People who have dementia often are eligible for help in the home, even when they are able to carry out tasks like dressing, because they need supervision to do so. A few Alzheimer's Association chapters have funds to assist families who need home care or daycare. Some programs have sliding fee scales, and some have financial aid available. All these resources are extremely limited, however. Most families can expect to pay at least part of the cost of respite care. Many families fear the enormous costs of residential or nursing home care. While they hope never to need such care, they feel they must conserve their resources rather than spend money on respite. However, because Medicaid pays for nursing home care only after the person has exhausted her own resources, the family may decide to expend part of the impaired person's, not the spouse's, resources on respite care, keeping detailed records to prove that the money was spent on her care. Keep back sufficient funds to pay privately for the first few months of nursing home care to ensure access to a nursing home. When this money is spent, you can apply for Medicaid funds. Because Medicaid rules change frequently, vary from state to state, and are extraordinarily complex, you must evaluate the person's resources carefully and consult someone knowledgeable about Medicaid law in your state before taking this step. Should respite programs mix people who have different problems? You may have heard that respite programs that specialize in the care of people who have dementia are supposed to be better than programs that mix people with different kinds of health problems. Families sometimes worry about what might happen if a frail, elderly person who has Alzheimer's disease is in the same program with a younger, strong person who has had a head injury or a similar trauma. Programs that serve a group of people whose needs and levels of functioning are similar can more easily provide specialized programming that meets their needs. However, many programs have successfully mixed people who have dementia with people who have head trauma.